home for every Notre Dame football game.
Goodbye, Brandon Wimbush. 58 yards. Sanders is pulling away with every stride, and he goes in. 92 yards.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, presents.
Race is on. Josh Adams wins it. Touchdown, Notre Dame. 98 yards. 76-yard touchdown play to Equanimeous St. Brown.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Faulkner breaks one tackle down the near sideline, gets a block, cuts back inside. Touchdown, Faulkner and Mishawaka.
York now in front, Ogilvy. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four! Gets up and in by Rex Kluger with 1.5 seconds left. Notre Dame leads.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And by Sport Clips. News at the top of the hour, also brought to you by Sport Clips. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett from our WSBT studios in Mishawaka. The Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune, Eric Hansen, is stationed at the University of Notre Dame. He is preparing to be a part of Brian Kelly's Thursday media session, which should take place sometime before 6 o'clock. We will bring you that press conference live during Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. On the program, besides hearing from Coach Kelly, Eric has wrote a couple of articles this week that I think we need to get into a tad bit. Mike Elko, the Irish defensive coordinator, he has a little history against triple option teams, although it's not Navy. Is that a big deal? We'll get into that conversation coming up in just a couple of moments. Plus, Eric did some really good work looking up some stats and taking a look at the top 10 quarterbacks in college football right now in pass efficiency offense and how good they were in their first season. So this sort of gets back to Brandon Wimbush and his ups and downs during his first season throwing the football for the Fighting Irish. At the bottom of the hour, it'll be Tyler James with another Fighting Irish Football Recruiting Insider Report as we talk all things Fighting Irish football recruiting. There is one official visitor this weekend. Tyler will tell you about that. And did the Miami game affect recruiting at all? Eric and I will ask Tyler about those subjects coming up in just a little bit here on 96.1 FM WSBT. Next hour, you will hear from Bill Wagner. He covers Navy football for the Capital Gazette News. He'll offer his insight on the United States Naval Academy and which quarterback might give the Irish the most trouble on Saturday. Those storylines coming up next hour here on 96.1 FM WSBT. But we welcome in Eric, who joins us live from the University of Notre Dame. And it looks like on Saturday, Eric, it's going to be another one of those weather days. I'm seeing 42 degrees at kickoff, and pretty much it's going to rain, barring a huge change in Mother Nature's decision. And it looks like by the time the game ends, it's going to be around 38 degrees. So you can just dream of that New Year's Six bowl game, which hopefully will be right around the corner.
Wow, yeah, I looked at that forecast and I remembered Mike Collins going on the PA at the end of the game saying, "We guarantee you better weather for the Navy game." And I'm going to try to cash in that guarantee if that's not true.
Yeah, he may have to bring us some paninis or something from Pittsburgh to kind of pay off that information that could turn out to be partially false. We'll see. Maybe things will change by the time we get to Saturday. One thing I do want to mention, just from that Miami game, I just read this today. Malik Rozier, the Miami quarterback, had really kind of heavy heart playing against Notre Dame. His father became ill the week of the game, had some heart issues, and is facing some surgery coming up. So Malik not only had to play against the Fighting Irish, he had to have to deal with his father being ill up in Tallahassee, Florida. So hopefully everything goes well for his dad. Apparently he'll have surgery on Monday. Well, Eric, we're back to triple option football. The Irish getting set to take on the United States Naval Academy. It's all about assignment football. And Brian Kelly was asked earlier this week about Mike Elko. his history with the triple option. And he has not faced Navy, but he has a pretty good history against Army. Eric will tell you about that in just a moment. But here was Brian Kelly talking about Coach Elko preparing for the triple option attack of the United States Naval Academy. And if Army's any help.
Having, you know, the understanding of that, and you know, his background is that he's had to stop option teams before. Georgia Southern, he's been in the option system, and that was something that we vetted out in the interviewing process. So very comfortable with, you know, what we'll be doing in terms of this isn't a defensive coordinator that's coming in inexperienced in terms of, you know, stopping the option.
Eric, I think the biggest misconception about Navy is you look at Temple, they had a terrific game plan and it worked extremely well, as Navy could not run the football at all against the Owls. Of all teams, you wouldn't think it'd be Temple. But just because Temple used that blueprint doesn't mean everybody else can use it effectively, because Navy is so good about bringing stuff out of the cellar. And something they haven't used in a couple of years, they'll throw it on you, and maybe that's not something you will be prepared for. So I don't know, even if Notre Dame plays Navy every year like they have forever, you never, ever, it seems like, are a step ahead of Navy. They're always a step ahead of you, and then you have to adjust to them. It's pretty remarkable how they can continue to make the triple option kind of new and fancy, even though they just kind of go back a few years and grab something and try to fool you.
Yeah, and they have to be able to do that now that they're in a conference and they're playing a lot of the same teams every year, and then you throw Notre Dame and Army in there. Their schedule is pretty similar now from year to year, so they have to be able to kind of not reinvent themselves but retweak every week. And I asked Brian Kelly about that, and I thought, you know, if it was so easy, SMU would have done it the next week, and SMU gave up, I think, 46 or 43 points to Navy, so they obviously couldn't replicate it. Now they saw a different quarterback as well. You know, they saw Malcolm Perry, who was taking things to the outside, was a much more dangerous perimeter runner when they were probably expecting Zach Abey, who's kind of a more power runner like Will Worth was last year. So they kind of got caught. And I think the one thing that is a carryover, Darren, is dealing with cut blocks. I think that's one thing that you learn from playing them every year is being able to deal with that issue.
Somewhere Jerron Jones is cringing with that particular thought right now.
Well, he's an offensive lineman now, so he doesn't have to worry about cut blocks. He can do them.
He can do all that stuff against defensive linemen now. Well, an interesting situation for the United States Naval Academy right now. They still have not announced their starting quarterback. It doesn't sound like they will publicly. We'll know when Navy runs out onto the field for their first possession Saturday at 3:41 here on WSBT Radio. Zach Abey is the guy we've talked about most of the season. He has put up some really good rushing numbers. He has been in the top 10 in rushing yards most of the year, but he has turned the football over a lot. Against SMU, he did not play due to a shoulder injury, but it sure sounds like his job status was kind of up in the air anyway. So Navy moved a former quarterback that was moved to the slot back to quarterback in Malcolm Perry. And what did he do against SMU? 282 rushing yards and 4 touchdowns. But he suffered a sprained ankle against the Mustangs, and he is questionable for the Irish contest. Now, the other option is Garrett Lewis. He does not seem to be as dangerous of a running threat as Abey and also Perry. So, Eric, let me ask you, which guy do you feel like is the most dangerous player for the Irish to go up against?
I would say Perry or Abey, and probably Perry, just because there's not a lot of film on him. And I think that the way this particular defense is structured, having them test the perimeter is more taxing than having them test maybe up the middle with Greer Martini, the option expert, being, you know, part of the game plan and so forth. So if I were Elko, I would want to see Malcolm Perry on the sideline, and then my first choice that I would like to see is Garrett Lewis, just because he hasn't run that much this year. He was a spread quarterback in high school, threw the ball a lot, didn't do a lot of zone read stuff in high school. So I would say he would be the most uncomfortable running their traditional offense. Now, he can wing it, and they are number one in the country in yards per completion. They just don't throw it that much.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser and Sport Clips. It is 16 minutes after the top of the hour. Brian Kelly's Thursday media session coming up in just a little bit. Eric, let's get back to Mike Elko. And I'm going to grab some information from an article you wrote about Elko in the South Bend Tribune, still available at IndyInsider.com. In three seasons at Wake Forest, Elko faced Army, another triple option attack team. Their offense is a tad bit different than Navy. But the most points Wake Forest gave up defensively was 21 points to the Black Knights. The Demon Deacons won in 2014, 24-21, a 17-14 victory in 2015, and a much improved Army team last year beat Wake Forest 21-13. In 2014, 341 yards rushing for the Black Knights. That was about 150 yards above their average. Eric, you also looked up in 2015, Army ran for 186, 58 below their average. And then in 2016, 238 rushing yards for Army against Wake Forest, 101 yards below their average. So it seems Mike Elko got a little better stopping that rushing attack of Army as the years went on. Even though they lost in 2016, he held them 100 yards below their rushing average. So when you look at that data you have from Army, does that help you in your preparation for the United States Naval Academy?
Well, I think it helps you because you understand the concepts of triple option football better than somebody that's maybe been in the NFL for a while and tries to drop into that world. But I still think Navy not only adjusts week to week, they adjust in within the game on you. And what I think Mike Elko will appreciate is he has a pretty good offense on the other side of the ball for Notre Dame. And if you can get up a couple scores on them, eventually that pulls them out of that triple option and they start trying to do things that they're not good at. But that's a task. You want to win the coin flip and take the ball and go down and score. But I think it definitely, the familiarity is going to help him. He can't do the Rubik's Cube in 60 seconds, but at least he knows the first few moves that he needs to make to get all those colors to line up.
Little background for maybe Irish fans that haven't been totally tuned into the Navy series through the years, or maybe you're a new Fighting Irish fan. The Irish won 43 straight games against Navy from 64 to 06. Navy snapped this long skid by winning in triple overtime in 2007 at Notre Dame Stadium, 46-44. Since that game, Navy is 4-6 against the University of Notre Dame, including winning in Jacksonville last year, 28-27. Navy ran out the final 7 minutes and 28 seconds of the game as they put together a 16-play drive that ate up 9 minutes, and Navy pulled off the victory 28-27. Notably from that game, the Fighting Irish had just 6 offensive possessions because Navy was playing keep away. So how do you change that? Here's Fighting Irish head coach Brian Kelly.
You know, we're in a different year, right? We're in a different year. So each year you look at, you know, what you're doing defensively, and we've been much better on third down, much better in, you know, taking the football away. We got to get back to playing that kind of defense where we're much more aggressive, where we're defeating individual blocks and making plays on third down to get off the field. We need more than 6 possessions. 6 possessions is not going to do it. It's too razor thin. So creating that mindset on defense, giving us the opportunity offensively to have more possessions.
And Eric, I think something that will help the Fighting Irish in a brand new year, as Brian Kelly mentioned, last year's football team, a lot of passes were thrown by this football team. This year's team is more run-oriented, and when you take a look at the possibilities in the run game and the issues that Navy has had stopping the run this year, the ability to run the football and wear down Navy and maybe have some of those big plays like we have seen from Josh Adams this year, those 50-plus yard runs, that could really pick up the pace of the game and allow the Irish to get the number of possessions necessary to put a little distance between themselves and the United States Naval Academy. Do you agree?
I agree to a certain extent, but I also thought last year's Navy game was the, even though it was a 28-27 game, I thought it was the worst defensive performance of the post-Van Gorder era for this defense, because they let Navy's offensive line push them around. They let them just, when they had a third and short, fourth and short, it was going to be a first down. They were, I guess, intimidated by the cut blocks, and it was, I think that was really the heart of what was going on there. And Will Worth was a bigger quarterback. He was pounding Notre Dame's defense. It just looked incredible. I mean, if you think about, if that had been a normal game with normal possessions, that would have been a 50-something to 50-something game. Navy just, you know, basically scored at will and controlled the ball. And I think that's going to be important. And I think Jerry Tillery is a huge key in this game. When Notre Dame has been good against the option, they've had somebody at nose guard that was invested in this and could blow up plays. And, you know, Lewis Nix, if he wanted to, was invested, but that wasn't always the case. Jerron Jones definitely wasn't in his final year at Notre Dame.
And that set a weird tone for the week, Eric.
Yeah, it did. But Stephon Tuitt was a defensive end that they put in the middle of that defense against the triple option teams, and he would blow up the fullback dive. He would blow up a lot of the quarterback plays just because he was so good at defending the option. He was so good at defeating cut blocks. And this is a big 6'6", 6'7" kid, but he had played against it in high school, so it was nothing to him to be able to do that. But you're right there, and I think the whole Jerron Jones show of not wanting to play against them set the tone for his teammates.
Absolutely. Agree 100%. And Bill Wagner from the Capital Gazette News is going to join us next hour. I know something that he's going to talk about is just the fact you go back to the game that was in Ireland when Notre Dame absolutely dominated that Navy offense. He feels like, just watching this series for the years, when Notre Dame has high-end players along the defensive line and in that front seven, that they're going to stop Navy. And that game was a prime example, as Notre Dame totally shut down that Navy attack that day. Last year's defensive line, Eric, was hit and miss. This year's group has been a little more consistent this year, but this is going to be a different challenge for them going up against the United States Naval Academy on Saturday. So we don't know who's playing quarterback yet. We'll see if it's A.B., maybe Perry goes. Lewis, I guess, would be the third option. But that is something we'll just have to focus on when we get to game day Saturday here on 96.1 FM WSBT. Let me just ask this, Eric, just so you can paint a picture for Irish fans. Do you feel like, let me just put a parameter, over the last 5 years, is this middle-of-the-road Navy football team? Is this a little better than normal? How would you assess how good this group is and what type of challenge it'll be for the Irish?
I think when Navy is really, really good, they have at least average defense, and this defense isn't. So it puts a lot on their offense. I think offensively, they're pretty talented. They're a handful, but they've committed a lot of turnovers. Mm-hmm. So I would say this is not the vintage Navy team. Now, I think they have it in them to play a big game, but between the turnover margin and the defensive problems, This isn't the best Navy team that we've seen by far, I don't think.
So I'm betting you would probably agree with the fact that you're more concerned about Notre Dame's preparation and focus this week after the Miami game, more so than what Navy can do to them.
I would agree, and also not getting too revved up from the senior day. You know, sometimes, I know Muffet McGraw mentions it in women's basketball. I don't even think she has the senior day actually on the last home game anymore.
No.
Because it's too emotional. So, you know, they have to get past a couple of things. What happened to them last week? and then the emotion of playing their last game and being all wrapped up in the roses and the hugs and all that stuff and the memories, and just get down to the business of playing football pretty quick.
Eric Hansen out at the University of Notre Dame. I'm Darren Pritchett. It is 25 minutes after the top of the hour, and we'll get to Tyler James and his recruiting update coming up in just a couple of moments.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on 96.1 FM, WSBT, with the ndinsider.com recruiting update. Here's Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and the South Bend Tribune's Fighting Irish football recruiting insider, Tyler James.
Tyler James has all the answers for Fighting Irish football recruiting questions right now on 96.1 FM, WSBT. Tyler, good to be with you. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Thank you so much, and happy Thanksgiving to you a little early. We won't have a report next week because it's Thanksgiving week, but hope you have a great Thanksgiving with your family.
Absolutely will. Food and football, can't go wrong with that.
Boy, there's no doubt about that. Well, the Irish are taking on Navy at Notre Dame Stadium. I would assume this is probably not a huge recruiting weekend. Anyone of significance visiting the Fighting Irish?
It's not big in terms of a number of guys, but there are some very talented recruits that will be making their way to Notre Dame. There's two 2018 targets, linebacker Peyton Wilson and tight end Tommy Tremble. And then there's a handful of 2019 recruits that either have offers or could end up with offers down the line. But let's start with Peyton Wilson. He is a linebacker that's committed to North Carolina currently. He has been committed to North Carolina since May, but obviously the Tar Heels haven't had a great season, 2-8 currently, and he's been weighing some other options. He visited NC State earlier this month and is making his way to Notre Dame this weekend. Notre Dame certainly is in a good spot already with linebackers with three commitments, and then also Shane Simon at Rover. So it's not necessarily a need position, but Notre Dame has shown that if there's talented linebacker recruits out there, they're willing to keep pushing for those guys. And 24/7 Sports ranks Wilson as the number four outside linebacker in the 2018 class, and Rivals ranks him seventh at the position. So it's a talented guy with big time offers, and we'll see if Notre Dame can try and pull him away from North Carolina following his official visit this weekend.
Tyler, when you talk about these linebackers, especially when you say an outside linebacker prospect, are you projecting them as a Rover, or are they either going to be a middle linebacker or a buck linebacker in Notre Dame system?
I think most of those guys would be middle linebacker or buck linebacker for Notre Dame. There's some of those guys that are outside linebackers that maybe could end up being defensive ends. But I think for the most part, when we're talking about outside linebackers at the high school level, usually those guys probably aren't going to be athletic enough to be Rovers. At least that's my thought. I think usually the Rovers that Notre Dame will have from the high school level will probably have played some safety because they'll have shown the ability to be more comfortable in coverage. But obviously those guys are going to have to be playing close to the line of scrimmage. But I think it's a position you grow into rather than get more athletic enough to play the position.
Tyler James joining us for his IndyInsider.com recruiting update on WSBT Radio. A 2018 target tight end, Tommy Tremble. Tyler's going to make a second visit to Notre Dame. Are the Irish a favorite for his services?
I think so. I think Tommy Tremble is at the top of the list when you talk about guys that could end up in Notre Dame's class, or most likely to end up in Notre Dame's class. He's a 6'4", 225-pound tight end out of Georgia who has been to Notre Dame twice this season, was also on campus in June. So getting him back for an unofficial visit, he's coming up here with a close friend. To get him back on campus is important because he already made his official visit for the Georgia game. And Georgia's one of the other schools he's considering closely. His dad played there. He's been to two games at Georgia, but he keeps coming back to Notre Dame and saying good things about Notre Dame, so Notre Dame could be able to add him to the class as a second tight end alongside George Takis, and that'd be a good addition because those two could kind of complement each other, Tremble being maybe the more athletic tight end and George being more traditional inline blocker at tight end. But Tommy's a three-star recruit, ranked as the number 16 tight end in the 2018 class and number 21 according to Rivals.
Well, if he's from Georgia, hopefully there is such a thing as 33 trucking mittens. That's all I have to say about Tommy Tremble. But as far as 2019 guys, I know that Notre Dame is working on that class pretty diligently at this point. Are there any headliners from the 2019 class coming?
Yeah, the kids in the 2019 class may end up being more talented than at least the headline guys than the 2018 guys. Zach Harrison is ranked as a 5-star defensive end according to 24/7 Sports out of Olentangy Orange High School in Ohio. He's been on the national recruiting radar for quite some time now. He received a Notre Dame offer last year, about a year ago, almost to the day, I believe. So Notre Dame is very familiar with him, and so are schools like Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, and Georgia. Ranked a top 10 prospect in the 2019 class by both rivals in 24/7 Sports. So to get him on campus again is big, and it's going to be one of the top targets for Mike Elston throughout the 2019 class. And then as well from Ohio, Cade Stover, who's played a lot of linebacker, but also is being projected as kind of a drop defensive end, sort of like Dalen Hayes at Notre Dame. 6'4", 230 pounds, has offers from Ohio State, Oklahoma, Penn State, Wisconsin, Michigan State. Ranked as the number 5 outside linebacker, according to 24/7 Sports, and number 6 weak side defensive end, according to Rivals. And then John Olmstead is a 4-star offensive lineman out of New Jersey. He's been on campus before, received an offer when he was on campus back in June for a camp. Ohio State, Oklahoma, Oregon, Wisconsin, Penn State offers. The number 8 offensive tackle in the 2019 class, according to Rivals, and number 32, according to 24/7 Sports. So those three guys are very talented recruits, names that Notre Dame has been familiar with for quite some time and has continued to recruit diligently. So to get them back on campus is important for the Notre Dame.
Tyler, I know at times Twitter can kind of be the king of the silly season. A lot of things can happen on Twitter that don't make a whole lot of sense. So let me throw this one at you. Last Friday night, a young man who was very interested in Notre Dame before he picked Florida State was defensive back Houston Griffith, the son of former Big Ten and NFL fullback Howard Griffith. And on Twitter, he tweeted out a commitment to Notre Dame. What in the world happened?
Yeah, I was just walking around downtown Miami with Mike Varell and Michael Caterina, my colleagues here at the South Bend Tribune, and all of a sudden I said, oh, guys, I might have to go back and do some work, because Houston Griffith tweeted 4 for 40 committed to the Irish, and shortly after that it was taken down, so I reached out to Houston and said, hey, what's going on? And he said one of his teammates had gotten a hold of his phone and decided to play a prank and tweet that out, but... certainly kind of cruel, especially considering that Todd Light was tagged in the tweet, so I wonder if Todd Light actually saw that before it was taken down or not. But Notre Dame has continued to recruit Houston Griffith, and that was kind of a reflection of that. He tweeted out a graphic that Notre Dame had recently sent him, so certainly something to watch. Obviously, his teammates were just kind of messing with him, but I think he is still open to Notre Dame despite being committed to Florida State, and we're going to have to keep track of any real or fake tweets coming from his Twitter account in the next few weeks.
Well, I don't think this is a fake tweet, but I saw that Jason Owe is going to visit. I'm surprised that Notre Dame is kind of back in the mix for him. I haven't heard his name for a while, defensive end out of New Jersey. How realistic is it that he's strongly considering Notre Dame?
Yeah, I think Notre Dame's fighting an uphill battle there. They were able to get him to schedule that official visit for the Echoes Award show in December. So that's good news for Notre Dame. But I do think that they're working maybe behind Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan's trying to get in there, hoping to host him for an official visit. And Miami also extended an offer. So it's getting crowded, and he's made visits to Penn State and Ohio State and hasn't gotten back to Notre Dame since July. So I think Notre Dame has kind of fallen out of the running there in terms of as a favorite, but I do think that you get him on campus and see what happens. I think the need is obvious. They only have one other defensive end in the class, and I think they're Jason Owe is probably their best chance of getting a guy that's a four-star recruit, the caliber of him, because I think when we move forward in this class, I don't know that Notre Dame is going to be reaching out to many guys as talented as him, and may decide to, if they can't get someone at his caliber, to maybe pass on some more defensive ends in this class. So we'll be fascinating to see. I think that there's plenty of work to do there, but Notre Dame is certainly familiar with him, and he's familiar with Notre Dame, and they'll keep trying to push him this direction.
Tyler, it's that time of the year where some of these organizations are announcing the players that will take part in high school postseason all-star games, and the Under Armour All-American game is one of those games that are now starting to hand out jerseys. Anyone from Notre Dame's class starting now to get some of those all-star offers?
Yeah, Jack Lamb, the linebacker committed to Notre Dame, it will be playing in the Under All-American game. He received his jersey on Tuesday. Currently, he's the only Notre Dame commit that will be playing in the game. That's on January 4th down in Orlando. And that's different than last year. There was a number of guys. I actually was down covering the game because there were so many Notre Dame commits last year. But in this year's game, it'll be Jack Lamb. And then there's a couple guys Notre Dame is still recruiting. Offensive tackle Nicholas Petit-Frere, who is uncommitted, and Houston Griffith, as we talked about before, who's committed to Florida State. So there could be some more Notre Dame representation in that game, but currently it's just Jack. But there are a number of guys that will be playing in the Army Bowl: Phil Dracovic, Shane Simon, Jason Adamalola, Derek Allen, and George Takis. So that seems to be where most of the Notre Dame commits will be playing come January when it comes to the All-American All-Star games.
Tyler, last one from me is, I know that you got a notebook coming up looking at kind of the early signing period. Are you surprised the number of Notre Dame recruits that seem to be aligning to take advantage of that?
Not necessarily surprising based off the way the season has gone for Notre Dame. I think it's going to be a lot easier for Notre Dame to get kids to sign during the early signing period because they are 8-2, and a lot of the question marks that Notre Dame had coming into the season have kind of been erased, and a lot of these kids were committed even before this season, so they feel pretty validated and confident in the program. So 15 guys told me that they plan to sign in December. There are four other guys that either aren't sure or maybe are considering signing in February. I wouldn't be surprised if those four guys end up signing in December anyways. Some of those guys are guys who recently committed, like Paul Mawala and Jordan Porter, that haven't really probably had a lot of time to figure out what happens in December and what the early signing period is all about. It's a new thing, so all these kids are still trying to sort through what that means and why or why they shouldn't do something like that. But I think Notre Dame is going to push to try and get them all to sign, so I do think that it's going to be a busy around December 20th through the 22nd to see which of these commits to go ahead and decide to sign early instead of in the first Wednesday in February like normal.
Tyler, I think Phil Dracovic has statistics very similar to when you play Madden, because I mean they're off the chart. Is his season still alive, or his numbers now final? Because they are just ridiculous.
Yeah, his season is still going. They're going to try and win a state championship at Pine Richland High School. I believe he passed over 3,000 yards for the season. He's over 7,000 career passing yards, and I believe he's the seventh person in the WPIAL, which is the league they play in Western Pennsylvania, to have ever done that. So yeah, he's passed for 3,003 yards with 30 passing touchdowns, 175 of 230 passing, which is 76%. So he's having an outstanding senior year. Obviously, last year he had his season cut short with a thumb injury, but has come back and really proved to be the prolific passer and runner. Has 805 rushing yards and 16 rushing touchdowns this season. No one can seem to shut him down, and it'll be interesting to see if he can carry his team to a state championship this year.
Amazing numbers. Tyler, what do you have coming up in the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com?
Yeah, there'll be a full visitors preview in tomorrow's paper, as well as a notebook talking about the signing day, signing period in December, taking a little closer look at that, and also some of the other latest news and notes to come with Notre Dame recruiting.
Very good. Tyler, thank you so much for your time. I know usually we take off Thanksgiving week, so we will talk to you maybe in 2 weeks, if that's okay.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Darren.
All right, Tyler James. You can follow him on Twitter at TJamesNDI for all the latest Fighting Irish football recruiting news, and, of course, in the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. Good stuff, as always, from Tyler. 15 minutes in front of 6 o'clock. Eric has vanished. He is getting set to cover Brian Kelly's Thursday media session. What type of news will come out of BK's media session? We'll find out together. We'll air that press conference coming up in just a little bit once it gets started. You're listening to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on your home of the Fighting Irish, Michiana sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. It is 10 minutes in front of 6 o'clock on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 FM, WSBT. My name is Darren Pritchett. Thanks for joining us on 96.1 FM, WSBT. Sports Beat is brought to you by Budweiser and Sport Clips on this Thursday evening. A reminder, things a little different tonight at 7 o'clock than the norm. The Brian Kelly Radio Show is moving to our sister station, Z94.3 FM, for tonight only. So the Brian Kelly Radio Show, live from O'Rourke's at Eddy Street Commons, will be on our sister station, Z94.3 FM, tonight at 7 o'clock. Here on WSBT Radio, it's Fighting Irish Basketball. 2-0, Notre Dame will take on Chicago State, who lost by nearly 70 points to Purdue earlier this week at Mackey Arena. So a chance for the Irish to get to 3-0. A chance for Bonzi Colson to go 3-4-3 in double-doubles to start his senior campaign. Jack Nolan will have the call tonight. Pre-game coverage of Notre Dame basketball at 6:40. The opening tip is set for 7 o'clock here on 96.1 FM WSBT. One of the seniors playing his final game at Notre Dame Stadium is linebacker Greer Martini. Earlier this week, he talked about a memory from Notre Dame Stadium.
So I don't think it's just one play. I think it's just there's going to be so many different things going through my head. But I think that one memorable moment definitely was my freshman year when we beat Stanford, that last second pass to Koyak. I think that's one of those moments that kind of stands out the most to me.
And for Martini, is this Saturday going to be a little different than a normal game?
I think that is definitely going to feel different. But, I mean, as a player, you know, I want to leave that stadium playing the best game I've ever played as a senior, just go out on the right note. So I think that you have to channel all of that different emotion that goes into running out, seeing your family, all that different stuff, and kind of get ready to play.
Now this Irish football team coming off the tough loss to Miami last Saturday. Is Martini confident that this team's going to be ready to go? Is the mood of the team in the right place?
So I think definitely it was a tough loss for all of us. But, you know, we had a couple days to, you know, kind of dwindle over it. But now it's time about getting back. We still have a lot to play for. There's a bright future for this team. We went out these next two games. We'll be in a great bowl game. So I think that the attitude is that we got to tell all the guys, look, we still got something to play for. And definitely, like, moving forward, we got 26 seniors on this team. Like, I think as an underclassman, it was always my goal on senior day to get those seniors a victory. And I think that's a big goal on our.
And also, Martini was asked about the Miami experience last Saturday. A lot of conversation how the moment was pretty big down there with that crazy crowd as Miami and Notre Dame squared off in prime time Saturday night. So here's what Martini took away from that Miami experience.
Yeah, I think that at a high stage, like especially being in Miami, there's like a lot of external factors that came into that game, whether that being how loud it was, whether it's like coming in on the buses, just seeing all their different fans. Just kind of as a team, we need to learn how to kind of get rid of those external factors and just focus on what's important, that's winning.
I can only add a little nugget to what Greer was talking about. Just thinking back to the BCS title game in January of 2013, there were media buses that took us from the media hotel to the stadium. And if I remember right, it was probably sometime between 4 and 5:30 we got on the bus to head over to the stadium. And with the way the stadium is set up, there's parking surrounding most of that particular stadium, and when they brought us in, there was a police escort and everything, so I think a lot of the tailgaters thought we were actually Notre Dame, because a lot of the Notre Dame fans were waving their pom-poms and they were cheering. It was only the media. They got excited for no reason, but I bring this up just because you went right through the tailgate to get to the stadium, and I'm just kind of picturing some of the things we heard, that things were thrown at the Notre Dame bus. I mean, you're right in the middle of all the tailgaters, so Notre Dame was kind of an easy target coming into the stadium, so I could see that could be something that possibly caught the team a little off guard on Saturday. Notre Dame and Navy, they kick off at 3:41 on Saturday here on WSBT Radio. Pregame coverage starts at 9 a.m. with the Jack Swarbrick Show. Eric, Sean, and I will have Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat live from the stadium from noon until 2:30. And right now the forecast, a 100% chance of rain for Saturday here in South Bend. We're expecting a high temperature of 42 degrees, dropping into the 30s by the time the game ends. And as of right now, our friends down the hall at WSBT 22, their meteorologists are saying that it's going to be a very windy day at Notre Dame Stadium. Winds out of the northwest at 15 to 25 mile an hour. So it's going to be a blustery day at Notre Dame Stadium. Be prepared if you're going to the game on Saturday. It is now 3.5 minutes in front of the top of the hour. We will bring you Brian Kelly's media session when it gets started, coming up here in just a couple of moments on 96.1 FM WSBT. This is the final time Coach Kelly will meet the media before the Irish take the field against Navy on Saturday. So stand by for BK coming up in a couple of moments on WSBT. Darren Pritchett back in our WSBT studios. Brian Kelly has reached the podium, so it's time to hear from the Fighting Irish head coach as Notre Dame gets set to take on Navy. And I think there's some youngsters in the room. Someone just asked Brian, what's his favorite ice cream? So we're getting the hard-hitting questions out of the way before us soft guys and gals of the Notre Dame media ask Brian Kelly some questions. So let's eavesdrop on Fighting Irish head coach Brian Kelly. If you're listening on the stream, we're going to break away from Sports Beat. You're going to get CBS Sports Radio, but you can listen to BK Live on UND.com right now. And that wraps up Brian Kelly's Thursday media session, courtesy of UND.com, brought to you live here on 96.1 FM WSBT. It's the Irish and the United States Naval Academy teeing it up this Saturday, kickoff at 3:41 on WSBT South Bend. Once again, Brian Kelly meeting the media. The Irish in pretty good shape health-wise going into this matchup against the Midshipmen. We'll take a timeout coming up in a few moments. You'll hear from Bill Wagner from Capital Gazette News, his thoughts on this Navy football team that's coming to South Bend. This is Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser and Sport Clips on 96.1 FM WSBT. 6:15 at WSBT. Darren Pritchett with you. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser and Sport Clips. 9 Major League Baseball free agents received qualifying offers from their teams from last year. To go along with that, a $17.4 million price tag. All 9 of those free agents passed on the qualifying offer, including 2 Chicago Cubs pitcher Jake Arrieta and reliever Wade Davis. So they are on the market. The Cubs will receive competitive balance round B picks. Actually, I should say that differently. They will get picks following the competitive balance round B selections. That's basically between the second and the third rounds of June's Major League Baseball draft. So Arrieta and Davis officially on the free agent market. Coming up next, Bill Wagner from the Capital Gazette News talks Navy football on WSBT. Welcome back to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 FM WSBT, presented by Sport Clips and Budweiser. Along with Sean Stiers, I'm Darren Pritchett. We're now joined by Bill Wagner from the Capital Gazette News. He covers Navy football. Bill, good to be with you. How are you this evening?
Great to hear from you guys. Doing well, thanks.
Good to hear from you as well. Let's start by talking about this Navy season. It's had some severe spikes, Bill. You win 5 in a row, then Navy loses 3 in a row. They bounce back to beat SMU 43-40 in their last outing. Any particular reason why there have been so many big peaks and valleys for this team?
Well, I think really what happened is that they won 5 in a row, but they didn't win convincingly. They were still trying to find themselves as a team. They beat Tulane by 2 points. They nipped Air Force by a point. So it's been they're not a dominant team in starting off 5-0. And then they ran into 2 ranked teams. Memphis and Central Florida are the 2 best teams in the American Athletic Conference. They are 17-1 between them. Both are nationally ranked and looks as though they're going to meet in the American Athletic Conference Championship, barring an upset. So, they didn't lose to slouches in Memphis and Central Florida. And then the Temple game is the one outlier. That's the one game that has got people scratching their heads, because that's a game the Navy should have won on paper. And based on the eye test, they were a better team than Temple. They just didn't play well. And that's kind of where it leaves you with a 3-game losing streak.
Well, Bill, Navy has traditionally taken pretty good care of the ball, but they've struggled there this year. They've got a negative turnover ratio. Why do you think they've had so much problems there when that hasn't really been an issue, it seems like, in the past?
Oh, no, they've always taken great care of the ball. That's one of the kind of basic premises of their program, is that they don't beat themselves with turnovers, penalties, and such. So, yes, it's been a real problem, and the Navy coaching staff has tried to figure out why it has been the case as well. It's just not something Navy does, and quarterback Zach Abey, who was a starter for the first seven games of the season, he, you know, was responsible for a lot of those turnovers, either fumbles or interceptions. So they put renewed emphasis on it, and they have done a little bit better here the last few games. They did not turn the ball over against in the win over SMU, which was encouraging. So, but yeah, no, it's just been one of those odd years that Navy has done. Very uncharacteristic of the midshipmen to have that many turnovers.
Bill Wagner is our guest on WSBT Radio. Bill, in your opinion, which quarterback do you believe would give Navy the best chance to win at Notre Dame Stadium on Saturday?
Oh, boy, that's a very difficult question. I think if they could take the three quarterbacks they have and mold them into one, that would be the guy because they're all very different. They all have their strengths and weaknesses. Zach Abey is a very strong, powerful inside runner, but he does not execute the perimeter element of the option as well as the coaching staff would like. That's not his strength. But, you know, in terms of running inside between the tackles, the guy's got 1,200 yards. He had a couple games in which he rushed over 200 yards. So, that's his strength. Decent thrower, but not great. And then, you know, obviously Garrett Lewis, his backup all season, is a really good passer. He's definitely the strongest passer of the three quarterbacks Navy has used. But, you know, he's not exactly a great runner. He's not fast, nor is he powerful. So, I mean, he may actually execute the option a little bit better in terms of the fundamentals and the, you know, the basic reading of the option. But, you know, he's not a powerful runner like Abey, and he's not fast like Malcolm Perry. Now, Malcolm Perry's not really a quarterback. Mm-hmm. He was a slot back all season. They put him at quarterback just so that he would have the ball in his hands more often because he's Navy's most dangerous runner, their most effective weapon, if you will. So, you know, obviously Malcolm Perry has got great speed. He's very, you know, elusive. He's got amazing moves. His ability to change direction at full speed. So, Malcolm is a completely different element than Abey or Lewis, but the reason he doesn't play quarterback is he's not a great passer. He, you know, last week they didn't throw a single pass. They didn't complete a single pass. They went to throw one pass and he didn't want to throw and he tried to pull it back, but it slipped out of his hand and ended up as an interception. So, you know, you don't have much of a passing threat with Malcolm in there.
Is the decision more with Abey? Is it more with the injury to his shoulder, or is it performance-related?
Well, I think it was a combination of the two. He was hurt. He had a shoulder injury. He was not 100%. He's also apparently been nursing a hip injury that's been bothering him for a while. I mean, kid's taking a lot of hits. He was averaging like 34 carries a game at one point, and so he has really taken some punishment. So I think they just felt like he needed a week off. He needed time to heal to get back to 100%. But really, you know, Kenny Amatalolo decided during the Temple game when Navy's offense was just so stagnant and kind of predictable and didn't really look like Navy that we're accustomed to seeing, he made that decision to go with Perry. He just felt like the team needed a spark, and Perry provided it. And obviously that was a bit of a surprise element, if you will. SMU probably wasn't really expecting to see Malcolm Perry, but I don't know that Malcolm Perry is the answer full-time at quarterback. He's very slightly built. He's listed at 185, but he really looks like he's about 165. the pounding that you take as a quarterback in the triple option, I don't know if Malcolm would hold up for an entire season as the quarterback. So, you know, it looked to me like a one-game thing. I could see Navy putting Malcolm back at quarterback, maybe against Army, because, you know, that's such an important game. But I don't know that Malcolm's a quarterback full-time. There's a reason he's playing slot back, and it's because he's not as rugged and physical as you need to be a triple-option quarterback.
Because they can do some different things, do you think there's a chance we could see at least two, if not all three of them this week?
Well, I do think that's a possibility. In fact, I broached that subject with offensive coordinator Ivan Jasper, and he said it's not out of the realm of the possibility. You know, you could kind of go with a thunder and lightning, if you will, with Zach Abey being your powerful inside runner. So you put him in for a possession, and you give a team a dose of power inside running of a guy that can run you over or break tackles. Then you come back the next possession with a completely different type of player, a real change of pace. Malcolm, who's more of a perimeter threat, more of an outside runner, a speed guy. And then, you know, Lewis, what he's done well all year is he's a good passer. He throws a nice ball. He had two very beautiful touchdown passes toward the end of the Temple game. So that's his strength. So, yeah, I think they could use a combination of these three players.
Bill Wagner from the Capital Gazette News, our guest on WSBT Radio. This next question, Bill, you could probably answer in a book, so I'm going to ask for the Cliff Notes version of this answer. But just watching Navy's triple option attack, what do you think is the biggest mistake opponents screw up when they take on this Navy triple option attack? Is there a common theme that you see from time to time that opposing team defenses make a mistake in handling this offense?
Well, I think really what the biggest mistake any defensive coordinator can do is think that they figured out the answer. There's been a few defensive coordinators that had success for whatever reason, and frankly, what I've seen a lot of times when Navy struggles, it's their own undoing as opposed to what the opponent's doing. I mean, they've seen every possible defense that you can employ, and they've had success against every possible defense.
Mm-hmm.
So really when they struggle offensively, it's either because the personnel on the other side of the ball is overwhelming. And I used the year that Navy played Notre Dame in Ireland. That was an incredible Notre Dame defense. And they had some guys on the defensive line that just dominated and completely changed the entire tenor of the game. But you know, the worst thing you can do is think you've got it figured out, because they have answers and they adjust to every possible defensive scheme. And so you've got to constantly be on your toes and be prepared to play this game of chess with Navy back and forth in terms of moves. So, you know, I don't think, you know, there's any major mistake. I mean, obviously, you can try to put too many guys up to the line of scrimmage, and they're very good at throwing the ball over your head. So if you try to commit too many guys to the run, that can be a mistake. But, you know, I think for the most part, the biggest thing I would say is coming in thinking that you have figured it out.
That's interesting you say that, because Brian Kelly was saying earlier this week that when you play Navy, they'll bring out stuff that it's been like 2 years since they've seen it, and then all of a sudden you see it. Do you see a lot of that over the course of the season, just mixing stuff up and bringing out different wrinkles all the time?
All the time. And, for instance, they threw for the Air Force game, they ran a zone option, which is not even the type of option that Navy has traditionally run. That's something they kind of had in their back pocket, and for that game, which was so important, and Air Force has gotten so adept at defending Navy's triple option, which they see every year, that Navy kind of pulled out of their back pocket this unique zone option, which is a completely different offense, and they executed it extremely well, and that was one of the keys to victory. And, you know, the same thing, I think the year that they played Notre Dame in the Meadowlands in New Jersey, they made a slight change in terms of how they blocked. What they do is they call it how far their spreads are. The offensive linemen line up a certain distance apart, and they change that, and they change who they block. I mean, that's another thing that Navy can do is they, you know, sometimes the guard is supposed to block the linebacker, and then if that's not working or they feel a change is necessary, they'll tell the guard to block the defensive end. So they can change the blocking assignments, and that year in the Meadowlands, they had Notre Dame completely befuddled because they adjusted the offense in such a manner that Notre Dame wasn't quite sure what they were doing and how to counter it. And that's the year that Navy had that big rushing outing and beat Notre Dame in the Meadowlands. So that's kind of the way it is with the midshipmen. They have got a very big playbook and library of things that they can go to counter, you know, certain defensive looks.
Mm-hmm. That might have been the year that the Irish did not have a defender over the center. And the fullback just went absolutely Berserk. Right. Yeah. Hey, Bill.
Alexander Teach was his name.
There
right?
you go. Absolutely.
Was that Bob Diaco's first year, maybe?
I think it was, yeah, yes. Because I believe it.
Right.
Well, remember some comments about that.
Right. Well, after the game, Brian Kelly said that they were playing the Veer, which they weren't. It just, you know, he wasn't even quite sure what they had just seen. Now, a year later, they figured it out. I think the next year was the game in Ireland where the Navy did nothing on offense. So,
yeah. Bill, my final question for you, just a couple of thoughts on the Navy defense taking on an Irish rushing attack. Other than two games, has been pretty dominant this year.
Well, this is obviously a very stiff challenge, and, you know, Navy is clearly outweighed at the line of scrimmage. You know, this is a very, very good offensive line, and both Kendi Amatalolo and Ivan Jasper have talked about the respect they have for this offensive line. This is one of, I mean, Notre Dame always has a good offensive line, but this is one of the better offensive lines Notre Dame's had in a while, and that I think you see the results are the rushing effort. And obviously, you know, Josh Adams is an outstanding tailback, a big, strong guy who can run you over. So this is a big challenge. Now, that being said, and this is kind of what Navy likes. It kind of fits their mentality of being tough and hard-nosed. I mean, they tend to play the run pretty well. I mean, frankly, when they've struggled here over the last few years, it's been against passing teams who have exposed them in pass coverage. So, you know, but there have been a few years when Notre Dame has decided to commit to the run against Navy, just based on the sheer size advantage, they can wear the midshipmen down. In fact, there's been a few years where Notre Dame was running all over Navy and then started passing the ball just because they wanted to have balance and say they passed as much as they ran, and it made no sense. They should have just kept running it down their throat. So I expect to see a heavy dose of Josh Adams this Saturday.
Interesting. My last question for you, Bill. They're doing the TV show, A Season with Navy Football. Notre Dame did it a couple of years ago on Showtime. One, have you seen much of it? And two, do you have a feel what Ken Niumatalolo thinks of it and if he'd do it again?
Oh, yeah, I did a big article about it. I mean, they showed up the very first day of practice. It was hard not to notice them. I mean, the very first practice of the season, and there's cameras everywhere, the boom microphones. So it was obvious something was going on. I asked the sports information director, Scott Strassmeyer, that very day, what is all that about? And they hadn't even announced that they would be doing the show. And so, and then once it was formally announced, I did a more in-depth article. And obviously, Coach Niumatalolo saw it as a great recruiting tool. I mean, you can't buy this kind of exposure. I mean, as you mentioned, Notre Dame was the subject of this series, the Florida State football program. So, I mean, that's two perennial powers, big-time programs. So for Navy to be mentioned even in the breath of Notre Dame and Florida State is huge. And, you know, people watch this nationally, and, you know, it puts Navy at a whole nother level to see them being featured on this weekly national program. It's been great for recruiting. It's really not been a distraction. I know as soon as Navy lost three in a row, it was inevitable that somebody was going to say, well, they're starstruck by this show. I mean, it's really kind of silly. To be honest, it's gotten to the point where they're so omnipresent and around all the time that it's almost like you don't notice them. I go to practice every day, and they're just there. You know, we've gotten to know Peter Rogaris is kind of the on-site producer and the same guy, so that they're doing the cameramen and sound men. You know, they're just now kind of like embedded, and it's really not a distraction whatsoever. So, but that was an easy thing. I knew that was going to come up as soon as Navy lost a few, that there was going to be fans who thought that the show was the reason.
Yep. He is Bill Wagner, covers the Midshipmen for the Capital Gazette News. Bill, safe travels to South Bend, and we greatly appreciate your time this evening, and we will see you on Saturday.
Yep, looking forward to it. Should be a great game.
All right, our thanks to Bill Wagner, Capital Gazette News, his thoughts on the Midshipmen. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And we're also brought to you by Sport Clips. We thank you for joining us. We're back tomorrow night at 5 for more Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 FM, WSBT South Bend.